Iraq has become the nation we dreamed it would be.
I would like to stress our president's strong desire for peace and stability in the Middle East.
Saddam survived the first Gulf War, but at huge cost to Iraq. By the mid-1990s, the country was on its knees.
Look what you're left with. Men who are nothing but afraid of you.
Crippling economic sanctions would only be lifted if Saddam cooperated with the UN weapons inspectors. Saddam refused.
My father has had many favorites, but only one first son.
Deserters will be shot. Cowards will be shot, do you understand?
Well, if the Americans come, I'm gonna put a bullet in his head.
I'll be pleased to let you.
This is my country!
BBC, House of Saddam.
When I was a boy and the great, a traveler walked through my village. The villagers stared at the stranger, but he kept on walking until an old man stopped and challenged him. What are you doing here? Asking for trouble? The old man said. The traveler was astonished. What do you mean? He said. I am not looking for trouble. I have no weapon, no gun, no knife. I have nothing. But that's just what I mean, the old man said. By walking without a weapon, you are inviting an attack. We are a country surrounded by enemies and collaborators, Osai. Iraq has a right to protect its people, to benefit from the skills of its scientists and engineers. The presence of weapons inspectors is nothing more than a temporary inconvenience.
Osai is becoming powerful.
He's the president's son, don't forget.
So am I. By marriage. Weapon development is the responsibility of my ministry, not Qusay's. It should be me in charge of this concealment committee.
Hussein, if Saddam says you dig a hole, then you dig a hole. Don't let your ambition control you. Be patient.
How many of these documents do we have to bury?
We don't have to bury any. Just watch.
Ali and Hussein watch as soldiers shovel earth into the crater they've dug, containing metal drums and crates. The hand of the revolution can reach out to its enemies wherever they are found. Saddam Hussein. Baghdad, May 1995. Tariq Aziz is on a small white UN coach.
Mr. Aziz, we seem to be taking an awfully long time to reach the plant.
Almost there, Mr. Eccles. Not far now.
The coach drives along a dusty road towards a number of large white hangars.
Stop, stop. Could you reverse, please? This is not the right way in.
Mr. Aziz, what's going on? Could you stop the bus, please?
I'm sorry, this is not the correct entrance.
Could you stop the bus, please? Could you stop the bus right now, please?
Stop, stop.
Everybody come.
Tariq looks nervous as the inspectors shuffle off the bus.
We are from the United Nations.
My name is Walt Eckers. All right.
The inspectors pace towards the checkpoint where a guard raises his hands to stop them.
It's all right.
Keep coming. They can't stop us from entering the building. Keep coming.
It's all right. They're with me. I beg you, wait a minute, please. Let me handle
it. Mr. Aziz.
Please, Mr. Eccles. Eccles, please.
Soldiers fire into the air.
There is no need to be alarmed.
Everything's under control.
Everybody, please,
remain calm.
At Baghdad Palace.
You should have crashed the bus, Tarek, with all your inspectors inside. Then they could have experienced firsthand our broken down hospitals.
What's done is done. It was unfortunate, but it changes nothing.
Except they'll trust us now even less.
Is that possible?
Accused must be made to understand the suffering is causing the Iraqi people. No produce in the markets, no medicines in the hospitals, no books in the schools.
Baba, sorry I'm late. Forgive me.
Uday kisses Saddam's hand.
So, what are we talking about?
UN dogs. Any economic sanctions?
We are reviewing strategies.
Any brilliant ideas, Uday?
Uday struggles to think of something while Hussein and Saddam look at him.
We should tell them to mind their own fucking business. How is that for an idea?
Uday.
Saddam stands up.
If Accus has a grievance, then he can come to me. I'll deal with it. Now, I don't want to be disturbed.
The others rise as he leaves.
Any brilliant ideas, Hussein?
Hussein looks at Uday, who flicks some dinner at him.
Are you trying to make a fool of me in front of my father?
What are you doing?
Uday, calm down.
He tried to make me look a fool.
I was just asking a question.
Yes, I have an idea, Hussein, to fucking kill you.
Uday!
Do you like it?
Uday stares wide-eyed at Hussein. When he doesn't respond, Uday throws the plate of food in his face.
And the day is coming.
Uday! We are all family here.
The day is coming.
He goes.
Why do we have to tolerate him, huh? He's a danger. A danger to all of us and to this country.
Hussein.
Hussein storms out. Saddam standing in a marble throne room, looking at a large framed document on a plinth.
Baba.
Ah, Hussein. You are here. Come. Come and see the family tree.
Baba, you need to speak to Uday. He and Hussein.
It has been proven. There is a clear line. I am descended from the Prophet. We have royal and holy blood in our veins. We are blessed and favored. I knew it. Yet this gift also brings its burdens. Because we have risen so high, we've become a target, a threat. We must always be on our guard, Kusai. Always.
Kusai nods uneasily as Saddam turns to admire the family tree.
I will go now, Baba.
Yes, go. Go.
Kusai walks away, glancing back at Saddam, who's reading. The second Saladin, the Anointed One, glorious leader, direct descendant of the Prophet, President of Iraq, Saddam Hussein. Hussein strides through a corridor and up the stairs to his living apartments, where his wife Raghad notices him.
What happened to you?
Uday happened to me. He's sick in the head.
What did he do?
No sooner had your father left, he starts yelling in my face, throwing plates of food at me.
Why?
Because he's Uday. He does what he likes.
I'll speak to Baba.
No.
He should know how Uday is behaving.
Don't you think your father already knows? It will make no difference. It will only make me appear weak. Leave it. I will deal with it. Your father is not interested anymore.
In you?
In anything.
So, Mama, will you be celebrating the national holiday tonight?
I doubt it. All of my children will be with their father.
Because we have to be with him, Mama. I'd rather be at my club.
With your Russian prostitutes?
They're dancers.
So, how is your father? Still with the blonde, I understand.
Not really.
Yes, really. Eat, Azizi. I'm not stupid.
He's with no one, Mama. He has the weapons inspectors to think about. The sanctions.
He's writing the Quran with his own blood. Seriously.
Sajida raises an eyebrow today. Elsewhere, Saddam's sitting in a gilded chair. He squeezes his hand as blood's being drawn through a tube in his arm into a conical flask. He looks at the flask as his blood drips into it. A little later, a calligrapher dips a pen into an inkwell filled with blood and writes onto a large page. Standing behind him, Saddam watches as he dips the pen and writes a few more words. Across the table lie different thicknesses of pen next to the flask of blood. In another room, Tariq and Rolf Ekias, the weapons inspector, are sitting in tall gold-framed chairs waiting. Saddam, still watching the calligrapher, nodding in approval at his work. Tariq and Ekias exchange polite smiles.
Today is the day of days we celebrate our victory over Iran.
Yes, I know.
The president is at the disposal of his people.
Mr. Ekius, exactly how many more months, years will these inspections take? After all, you've seen everything there is to see several times.
Mr. President, my work will continue until such time as I am satisfied I have seen everything.
Today, I meet my people. They petition me for favors.
A tradition on the Day of Days.
What do I say to the mother who asks me for milk for her baby? Do I tell her that you are searching for an invisible atomic weapon, and as soon as you find it, then her child can be fed? Mr. Ekius, the United Nations are punishing the people of Iraq for no reason. No reason. You can stop this torture.
Mr. President. Mr. President!
Saddam strides out, ignoring him.
I will provide you with a further list of people I would like to interview in due course.
Mr. Ekius, I've been...
Enjoy the celebrations, Mr. Aziz.
Ekius picks up his briefcase and walks out. An expensive car drives through a run-down city street where thin, unkempt men sit and stand nearby.
Our country is dying, Saddam. Look at it. All it would take is for me to lose my temper with Uday just once. And we could be one of them.
Look at them. Poor wretches.
Then I suggest you don't lose your temper.
A beggar bangs on the window.
Enter! Eftah!
Their car drives on, in a warehouse.
Are we selling it as it is, with medical aid labels everywhere?
Well, of course not. We're going to change the labels. Drive it into Jordan first thing in the morning. Sell it there. Everything accounted for?
Yes, sir.
Unload the rest of the trucks.
The official looks nervous.
Did you hear what I said? Unload them.
Sir, there's somebody waiting to see you.
Uday points a gun in Hussein's face.
Hey. Golden boy. Do you like my new gun? I'm taking your trucks and everything that's in them. What are you gonna do about that?
The trucks and the contents belong to the people of Iraq. Emergency aid.
And yet you're selling it on the black market.
Hasta la vista, baby.
He blows a kiss at him.
Yalla!
Uday walks off with soldiers in tow, and Hussein looks relieved.
Why didn't you warn me?
Sir, how could I? He had a gun. It's Mr. Uday!
Hussein delivers a ferocious slap.
What is Odai doing here?
He's taking the trucks.
But that is our money.
So now it is his money. It's time for us to act, brother, before it's too late.
Our hero, President Saddam Hussein, spent the Day of Days meeting his people as they prepared to celebrate the national holiday. Once again, our benevolent president welcomed his people and invited them to petition him to grant favors and listen to their requests. Tonight, the president will be holding his annual Day of Days ball at the Al Faw Palace in Baghdad. This glamorous occasion will be attended by 300 family members and local dignitaries. Throughout the country, loyal citizens are attending military parades to commemorate our glorious victory over Iran.
Tonight? Does it have to be tonight?
Go hurry them up.
Hussein, this is crazy. Hussein!
Saddam Kamel looks at the president on the TV.
Ragat, my dress.
Come in.
Hussein enters.
Ragat, we have to leave.
It's a party, Hussein. It's not as if we're going to be late.
We want to look perfect.
Please, hurry up.
2 minutes.
Okay.
Ignore him.
Sister. 2 minutes, no more.
In evening wear, Uday passes a line of waiters and waitresses carrying trays and glasses down a corridor.
Stop.
He eyes one up and beckons her.
You. Follow me.
She follows him down the corridor carrying her tray. Kusai is waiting in a chair in a marble room. In the toilet, the gap at the bottom of the cubicle door reveals Uday and the waitress's feet, his trousers around his ankles. Kusai looks at his watch and springs up from the chair. In the toilet, Uday is snorting cocaine off a marble sink as the waitress emerges from the cubicle.
Hey. Where are you going? I haven't finished with you.
Wait.
Kusai enters.
Uday. Not tonight. Not here.
Uday rolls his eyes and turns away as Kusai goes to the cubicle.
Go. And take the glasses with you.
Uday.
Make sure you clean your nose.
Kusai leaves, and Uday looks in the mirror and snorts more cocaine off the blade of a knife. In a limo.
Saying we're going miles out of our way. What's happening?
I told you there is something I have to do.
What?
Habibi. Are you feeling unwell?
He tears off his bow tie.
We're not going to the party.
What?
Hussein.
They would have found out sooner or later.
Hussein, what's going on?
Ali. Ali. Hussein and Saddam Kamel, have they arrived yet with my sisters?
I haven't seen them.
Then check that they've left. The president will be ready any moment. And he wants his family around him. Uday! Uday!
Where exactly are we going? Hussein!
To the border.
What?
Jordan, we have discussed this before. Your father cannot see past Qusay. Uday is running wild. Every time I meet him, he threatens to kill me.
It's true, Ragat.
You are my wife. Rana is my brother's wife. It is your duty to support us.
Yes, but not now. Not tonight.
Now is the time. Sanctions are killing Iraq every day. And as long as your father is in power, they will never be lifted. Iraq needs a fresh start. We need a new leader.
And you think that's you?
He looks at her.
They left home almost 2 hours ago.
Have you followed the route?
It's been done. No accidents have been reported, nothing.
Something's wrong.
Kusai strides off, followed by Uday, on the road at night.
Hussein, let me try to speak to Baba.
If I thought I had that option, I would have taken it. Can you please trust me?
The cars roll up to the border checkpoint.
General Hussein, please, carry on.
Hussein waves and the car continues. Watching them leave, the guard picks up a phone in his kiosk.
Hello, marhaba.
Kusai approaches Saddam in a corridor.
Everything is ready, your sisters.
Baba, we have a crisis.
What is it?
Hussein and Saddam Kamel may have crossed the border into Jordan.
Where are my daughters? Answer me. Where are my daughters?
We don't know. We think they've gone too.
Saddam's in Hussein's house and finds a lady's shawl on the stairs. He looks at a chest covered in framed family photos and looks up at more of them on the wall. He sees a picture of himself and Hussein together and turns away towards a small table. He clutches a piece of paper. He throws an ornament at the wall.
Sat at my table with my daughter. And all the time he was planning to betray me, his country. We'll be talking to the CIA.
Baba, we have specialists. I can eliminate him.
I can do that.
No.
I could do it. Baba, I want to do it.
I said no. We have to bring them back.
Mr. President.
It's Ali.
Saddam.
I swear, I know nothing about this.
My nephew is a lord unto himself. Ali.
Saddam embraces him.
Your loyalty is not in question. I will need your assistance.
Anything.
Hussein trusts you. You must go and speak to him.
Of course.
If it's about Uday and an apology is needed, then Uday will apologize. He will go with you. But keep a low profile in Jordan. It would be best for all of us to sort this out behind closed doors.
I will do everything I can. Everything.
Saddam pats him on the shoulder and walks away. Amman, Jordan, July 1995.
So different from Baghdad. So alive.
Hussein turns from the window.
What rank are you? I'm here to determine what's true and what's not.
You think I come here and risk my life to tell lies?
A drink.
No, thanks.
I trust you are capable of delivering messages to your superiors in Langley.
That's not quite how it works.
We have a common interest in replacing Saddam Hussein, correct?
Possibly, yes.
Before we proceed any further, I will require formal assurances that you will place your organization at my disposal. In return, and upon my succession to Saddam as president, I will be able to guarantee future oil supplies. Subject, of course, to future military assistance.
It may be a little more complicated than that.
Do you have any other options? Any other candidates for president? What form of coup is the CIA planning now?
Agents listening.
Lucky guess.
When Langley sees what I have to show them, it won't be at all complicated.
Well, that may be a good place to start. Before
Before we proceed any further, I will require formal assurances.
Ragad's listening solemnly in another room. Uday to Ali.
I always knew he was a snake. He's brought shame to the door of the Almajids. He's put all the Almajids in danger.
Uday looks at Ali and smiles, taking a puff on a big cigar. In Jordan, Hussein's searching through documents and maps when Ragad enters and puts on some earrings in the mirror.
I suspect the king will want us to dine with him tonight. Make sure you wear something nice. There you are.
Negatives.
Ikis will have a seizure. He's been searching for this for years.
You're giving up Iraq's secrets.
Habibti, we have a million secrets in Iraq. But that's all we have.
You have no idea who you're dealing with, do you? All this time you've worked with my father, and you still think you can win. You know nothing about him.
Ragad, go find a nice dress to wear.
Uday and Ali are slumped in two large leather armchairs waiting.
The king will see you now.
About time.
They straighten their clothes as they follow the official through to a large marble room.
Your Majesty, how good of you to see us.
Do you know my foreign minister, Mr. Kabariti?
Honored, Mr. Kabariti.
Please.
Thank you.
They all sit.
Your Majesty, Foreign Minister, we are all men of experience here. A misunderstanding has arisen involving our cousin, General Hussein Kamel al-Majid. We wish to clear up this misunderstanding. So, Uday and I have come in friendship to invite Hussein to return to Baghdad, to his family. After all, this is a family matter, not political.
That will not be possible, I'm afraid.
In what way is this reasonable request not possible?
Hussein Kamel has asked me for political asylum. I have granted his request.
He fears for his safety were he to return to Iraq.
He fears for his safety. He said that. What about the safety of my sisters? They have been brought here against their will. I have a right to see them.
Your sisters have made it clear that their place is with their husbands. I respect their wish.
I want to hear it from them. Where are they?
Gentlemen, that really is all we have to say on the matter.
Baba isn't going to be happy. Hear me? My father will not be pleased.
Your Majesty, Foreign Minister, thank you.
For nothing.
Ali follows Uday out of the room, in Baghdad Palace.
General Hussein Kamel al-Majid is believed to be sheltering in the royal palace in Amman.
I can hold Iraq like this, better than Saddam holds it now.
With UN weapons inspector Rolf Achaeus and his team still in Iraq searching for illegal weapons.
Thank you.
And an economy crippled by UN sanctions. This defection is a further blow to Saddam Hussein's previously unshakable hold on power in Iraq.
We left Iraq because we had nothing left in Iraq. Iraq is dying. We are trying to save Iraq.
Look at him.
Do you think you're the man to save
him? I can't believe that he could do such a thing. To stand before the world and denounce our country. Your President, I can only assure you my family's absolute devotion to you and Iraq.
This is not your fault. There are traitors all around us, all controlled by CIA and by Hussein. But we are watching them, my friend, and we will strike back.
I want you to increase surveillance levels across the board.
Anyone acting suspiciously is to be picked up and brought in immediately for questioning. And make sure Ekius does not leave the country.
Mr. Ekius, United Nations?
Yes?
Your flight to Jordan has been delayed. Mr. Deputy Tariq Aziz would like to see you.
When Ekius arrives, Tariq, you are to give him everything.
Everything?
All of it. Research, drawings, blueprints, equipment. We dig it all up and move it to Hussein's farm, and we give them everything. Tariq and Qusay will oversee the operation.
But Baba, that means we lose.
No, the traitor will lose. We cut his throat. Without any new information, he is nothing but a refugee. Without any story to tell, he is unworthy of protection.
Mr. Ekius, may I assure you there will be no further obstacles to our cooperation. You and the Anscombe team should consider yourselves honored guests here in Iraq.
Thank you. I'm pleased to hear what you say. It is unfortunate this level of cooperation was not evident from the outset.
Of course, Mr. Ekius, and we share your sentiments. Now, if you permit us, we have uncovered yet more information hidden by General El-Majid from both us and from you. My son will show you.
A soldier smashes the lock on a barn, and Ekius goes inside. He opens a metal case on the floor. He picks up some negatives and holds them up. He puts them down and unrolls a diagram, then looks at Ali and Qusay with a smile and a little shake of the head. The pair look at each other uneasily. Oman, August 1995.
Mr. Ekius, we have been enemies before. But now, I am glad we meet as friends.
Perhaps you would take a seat, General Hussein.
So, where should we begin? You see, what you have been chasing are mirages. All weapons, biological, chemical, missiles, all have been destroyed.
This is before or after inspections began?
Since 1991.
Ah.
Yes. Don't underestimate yourself, Mr. Ekius. You are very effective in Iraq. Sooner or later, you would have discovered them. And you would have justified any action against us you chose.
So you expect us to take your word for it that all weapons were destroyed?
They were a liability, not an asset. We understood that we had something far more valuable than the warheads. We had the knowledge and the expertise. And that, you will agree, is where the true value lies.
Of course. Iraq's future capability is still a primary concern. Are these the papers you have brought us today?
These are but a sample. They represent the blueprint for the entire weapon program.
Ekius stares at him.
We have seen them already. The Iraqi government disclosed them a few days ago.
That cannot be true.
They were discovered in a chicken shed outside Baghdad.
Chicken shed?
According to your president, the shed belongs to you.
This is a joke.
He also claims that you have been acting alone in concealing information.
No.
With a view to a meeting not dissimilar to this one.
I am not responsible for the concealment of information. This is another joke. A lie. Do not believe them.
Would you like a glass of water, General?
Hussein's shaking in disbelief. In Iraq, Saddam sitting alone in a garden in sunglasses, watching children playing around a nearby tree. He appears to be deep in thought.
Everything. He gave them everything.
You never really understood him, did you? The most important thing to my father is loyalty. At any cost.
She gets up and takes Rana's hand.
By the way, the king would like us to move out of the hotel and into an apartment.
That was just one battle. I still have value.
What now?
Hussein looks at his brother desperately. Sajida is sitting with Saddam.
You must miss our daughters.
Of course.
I can't bear to think that they've been taken from us. And the grandchildren. Is it right that they should grow up in a foreign land?
Saddam, what do you want me to do?
I want them home.
Will they be safe?
They are my daughters.
Will they be safe?
She stares at him intensely.
I give you my word. I want you to speak to them. Tell them that I understand they've been taken against their will. I know none of this is their fault. Just tell them that I want them to come home.
I understand you gave a telephone interview last week to the editor of the Jordanian newspaper, Bilat.
What of it?
I understand you threatened to kill him.
I wish to see the king. Our accommodation is unacceptable.
Being a journalist, he recorded the discussion. You can clearly be heard threatening to kill him. The phrase you used was, I will cut you up piece by piece.
That's what you say I said. Then I agree.
General, he is intending to take you to court over these threats.
To court? This is absurd.
I have to remind you, this is not Iraq. Here in Jordan, we all live under the law.
From another room, Ragad rushes over to the phone.
Eva.
Yes?
Hussein looks worried. Later, he's outside at a table with the CIA agent.
Why are we sitting out here on show? Saddam has assassins everywhere.
We're not on show. We're having a cup of coffee. Don't you like it?
I demand guarantees of protection.
In return for what?
I have given you everything. I know how Iraq works. I know how Saddam Hussein thinks. I've been at his right hand for more than 10 years.
And it's because of that no free Iraqi will come anywhere near you. You were part of his killing machine, Hussein. And we've got plenty of other options. You're on your own now, I'm sorry.
Sorry? That's it? That's all that America has to offer?
Hussein grabs his arm.
Yeah. And the truth of it is, we don't even mean it. Watch out for assassins, General.
The agent throws down some coins and walks away. Hussein starts looking around, paranoid. He runs through the streets, peering round corners. In Baghdad Palace, Saddam picks up the phone. In Jordan, Hussein hurries through the bustling crowds, panic etched in his face. Back in the apartment, he's staring at the closed curtains, wearing a vest. He looks over his shoulder at the phone and slowly turns around to face it. Hussein walks over to the phone on the table and picks up the receiver.
Yes.
Hussein. It's Omar Saddam.
Your president?
I'm sending you a letter. What is written is the truth. Neither I nor my sons will harm you or your brother. I swear. You're the husband of my daughter and the father of my beloved grandchildren. It is time for you to come home.
Saddam slowly replaces the handset and sits back in his chair before rising to his feet and straightening his jacket. Hussein hears the dial tone and looks at the receiver in disbelief before putting it down. Still on his feet, Saddam straightens his tie in a regal manner, then puts his hands by his side and begins walking through the cavernous white marble room. He passes his gold-framed throne with red upholstery on the right and a suite of white leather sofas on the left.
Do you believe him?
I've known him for a long time. He is a man of his word. Yes, I believe him.
Then you're a fool, Hussein.
He says himself. Why would he harm the husbands of his daughters, the fathers of his grandchildren?
Because you betrayed him.
And we will be punished. We will be out of office for some time. No matter. Anything is better than this.
Habibi, we will make the best of things here.
Rahat, there is nothing here for us. You don't seem to understand how much your father relied on me. Rahat, you didn't hear his voice. He was speaking the truth. He will forgive us.
He does not forgive traitors.
In Baghdad Palace.
We were doing routine searches on the road from Amman to Baghdad, and that's when we found it.
A satellite phone? It must be CIA.
Yes.
This is Hussein's doing. His weaknesses allowed these vipers to believe they can seize power. But you will change that, Hussein. You are the man Hussein can never be.
Shall we make the arrests?
No, no. We have the system. Let's use it. We do nothing but listen. This phone belongs to a CIA spy. Other traitors will soon be calling it with information.
Saddam pats Kusai on the arm proudly and walks away. In Jordan.
What?
I can't go back. We shouldn't go back.
We are going home. It has been decided.
No.
Yes.
I don't want to die!
Refuse to go back, brother. And you will die, because I will kill you! I will not be nothing!
Hussein lowers his gun, and Saddam Kamel backs out of the room. Hussein puts his gun away, and he watches his brother go. He then walks over to the dressing table mirror and carefully places a black beret with gold insignia on the top of his head and stands up straight. Their car, escorted by two others, drives through the desert. Inside, the sisters look worriedly at each other. As their car approaches the border checkpoint, another is parked in waiting. Uday and Kusai are sitting inside.
This looks like them.
Hey, no one is to be harmed, okay?
They get out of their car as Hussein's vehicle draws up.
A madman comes to greet us.
Welcome home. We've missed you. Golden boy. Frightened?
Hussein, Saddam Kamel, out of the car.
Why?
Get out of the car.
What's happening? Where are you taking?
You won't be harmed. Baba's given his word. You and Rana are going straight to Mama. Get out.
We will be fine.
Get out. One of my drivers will take over from here.
In the back of the car, the brothers kiss their wives, then get out of the car, leaving them looking anxious. Uday pats the roof of the car and it drives off.
Your weapons, gentlemen.
Hussein and Saddam Kamel hand over their guns, then Uday beckons them to follow him and Kusai. They lead the brothers into a room.
Have a seat.
Hussein and Saddam Kamel sit down by a window looking out onto the border crossing.
Take off your shirts.
What? He said take off your shirts. And your berets.
You are not fit to wear the uniform of Iraq.
The brothers take off their shirts, both of them wearing white vests underneath. Uday takes their shirts and berets and throws them in a bin.
Sign the papers. This is your agreement to a divorce from my sisters.
Divorce? But I don't want a divorce.
This is what the president wants. Sign it. The president says you're nothing to him now. And you will be taken to your father's house.
They sign the documents, then Kusai puts them in a file and strides towards the door. Uday leans over the table and spits in Hussein's face.
Let's go.
Uday saunters away.
At least we're alive.
We are divorced. I am nothing.
We have done as you requested, Baba. We traced the callers to the CIA satellite phone. We have produced almost 800 names. It seems Hussein was not the only one talking to the Americans. The arrest will begin at dawn.
Show me the faces of these traitors.
Kusai starts a slide projector, and images of men and women are shown on a screen. Saddam watches with a grim expression. The traitors are dragged into cells. A teacher is apprehended in the classroom and pulled out of the room. Guards beat a man in a cell, one of them kicking him in the face. A man slumped in a cell, blood on his vest. A prisoner grabbing the bars of his cell. A man being dragged down the street by soldiers. Saddam watches the faces on the slides with a look of grim intent.
Yeah.
CIA? This is Saddam Hussein, the president of Iraq. I'm calling you to tell you that your boys are now my guests. It is unlikely you will be seeing them again.
He cuts off the call, then stares at the receiver.
America wants to control Iraq. They will never give up. Till I'm gone.
Saddam and Ali stroll through a cloister.
Cousin Ali, I'm sure you understand the pain that your nephews have caused me.
Very much so, Your President.
I would be within my right to exact vengeance for the damage they have caused. But I've given my word that neither I nor my sons will harm them, and I'm a man of my word. Yet the stain of dishonor and betrayal is there for all to see. It is the entire Al-Majid family who must carry this stain to their graves. Unless, of course, it is removed.
Mr. President, I will avenge the shame my nephews have brought on the Al-Majid family name.
Saddam pats his shoulder.
Make sure it's done properly, Ali. In the Bedouin way.
Two trucks pull up outside a large house, and Ali gets out with some soldiers. Two of the soldiers carry a wooden crate to the front garden gate, while the others aim their rifles at the house.
Hussein Kamel! Saddam Kamel! Collect your weapons! We, the men of the Noble Al-Majid,
it's Uncle Ali.
We've come to purge the traitors from our family. Collect your weapons. Let's make it a fair fight.
Uncle Ali, the president has spared us.
But the tribe find you guilty. Last chance. Collect your weapons.
Saddam Kamel.
Hussein and Saddam Kamel pick up the crate and carry it inside. They close the front door behind them. Ali takes out a handgun and shoots through the windows. The brothers duck behind a dining table as the soldiers open fire and spray the room with bullets. The brothers flip open the crate and take out a rifle each. Ali stands back and watches as the soldiers riddle the house with bullets.
Upstairs! Go upstairs!
The brothers dash upstairs and into a bedroom where they duck beneath a window. They look at each other, then leap up and fire through the window. The soldiers duck and take cover behind the trucks.
Stop firing!
Ali slowly walks towards the house, the soldiers training their guns on the building.
How long do you think we can hold out, brother?
Not long.
The brothers spring to their feet and open fire through the window. Ali runs for cover and returns fire, as do the soldiers. A bullet rips through Saddam Kamal's chest.
Saddam! Saddam!
He falls back onto the bed, and Hussein clamps a hand over the wound and feels his neck for a pulse. Saddam Kamal stares lifelessly. Hussein grabs a gun and turns to the window, but a bullet tears into his chest.
Enough! Enough!
Hussein props the rifle on the windowsill and fires madly. Ali walks slowly towards the house. Hussein gets off a few last shots, then staggers out of the room, clutching his chest. He reaches the landing, then stops when he sees Ali at the foot of the stairs, pointing a gun at him.
You call this fair, Ali?
Ali shoots him in the chest, and Hussein drops to the floor. Ali climbs the stairs with a grim expression. He looks down at Hussein, his face hardening with anger, and shoots him several times in the chest.
As fair as the traitors deserve.
He drops his gun on the floor, then walks away. In the palace, Saddam places an elegantly wrapped box of chocolates in front of Ragad and Rana.
For the children. Chocolates.
The women wear anxious expressions, clutching each other's hands.
You look well, both of you. How is your mother?
She's a widow, like her daughters.
The time you were away was not good. But now you're back. I asked you to come today because I wanted to look into your eyes.
Ragad drags her gaze to his.
I see you're still my daughters. So you will understand that what happened was a necessary end.
Hussein was my husband, Papa. You chose him for me. And I loved him.
She looks down at her hand, clasped in Rana's.
By killing Hussein and Saddam Kamal, you have destroyed a part of us both.
She fights back tears.
May we leave now?
He waves his consent. Ragad and Rana get up and leave. Saddam stares into space with an impassive expression.
And make sure you catch the finale of House of Saddam next week at the same time. Pressure on Anne for an air as the Tudors continues the drama here on BBC Two on Friday at 9 o'clock.